Welcome to Hero Hype, episode 17. This is a superhero podcast from Hypebull.com, and I'm Marama, as always.
And I'm Donya.
And we're back for another fun-filled episode. It's a little light on the news this week, but we are still here to break down all of the news and everything that you need to know about the world of superheroes. Before we get started, I guess we should be a little bit in mourning this week. Dee, do you need to talk about Constantine? Do you have some feelings?
I have a lot of feelings about it. I think NBC really did a disservice to Constantine, just in general. I don't think they handled the marketing particularly well. I don't think they gave the show the freedom that it needed to explore some of the darker aspects of Constantine, because it gets really dark sometimes. But I also think that they put it at completely the wrong time on the schedule as well, and gave it, like, they killed it before the first episode even aired, pretty much, through the time slot they gave it. And, I mean, to be honest, a lot of other platforms, their schedules are already full. They've already picked up their own superhero franchises. They've already got, like, full schedules, or they've got pilots that they've ordered already. So, you know, I figured that the best, like, probably the best bet that it would have ever had would have been with Amazon, but I guess we don't really know behind the scenes just how well it did, even though on Amazon Prime Instant Video in the UK, it's still consistently in the top watched videos after Outlander. So, but maybe that just wasn't enough. Though, if anyone on here is as big a Constantine fan as I am, its new comic series started last week. And it was an okay start to, like, a big reintroduction of Constantine. I think it needs a couple more issues to really find its feet, because it probably wasn't the strongest opener. But it was okay. I actually fairly enjoyed it, so I'm going to keep following it as the issues come out. So, he's not completely dead.
I'm 1,000% sure that no one listening to this show is as big a Constantine fan as you are. But you never know. Probably. Hey, you never know. Things could come back. Weirder things have happened. So we will see.
Weirder things have been rebooted. Let's just say that.
Exactly. Although that said, I mean, there's no shortage of superhero shows, so
you'll find
something else.
I'm kind of hoping that despite this, that maybe the Justice League Dark film that's coming out, they may consider Matt Ryan, because even, like, whatever people thought of, like, the Constantine series, there was one consistent thing, and that was everyone loved Matt Ryan as John Constantine. So, you know, there's still hope that he might come back, maybe.
Well, we shall see. If it does, you will hear about it on Hero Hype. That I can guarantee. Okay, before we jump into a little bit more TV news, it's time for our brief history segment. This is the segment where we tell you everything you need to know about a character who is going to be possibly important coming up in the world of superhero film and TV. And this will make sense once we get into the news. But Donya, who are we learning about this week?
We are learning about Jason J. Garrick this week. So, Jason Garrick was conducting an experiment on purifying hard water vapors without any residual radiation left when an accident left him unconscious and with superhuman speed, making him the first Flash. When Jay regained consciousness, he continued as a prominent scientist, even opening his own lab in Keystone City, but also became an active member of the Justice Society of America, even serving as its first chairman. He fought alongside other heroes throughout World War II as part of the All-Star Squadron. Eventually, three of his enemies placed Jay and all of Keystone City in suspended animation, where he remained until Barry Allen discovered him much later. After waking Jay up, both Flashes were able to defeat the villains and save the city. Jay retired after this event, though he fluctuated in and out of it over the years, as and when both Barry and Wally needed his help.
Okay, and the reason that we're talking about this is because although there hasn't been a lot of news, we have had a little bit for The Flash over the last week or so, and the biggest piece is that they're casting another hero for season two, and although we don't know yet who it is, the most popular theory seems to be that it's going to be dun-dun-dun Jay Garrick, and guess what, you know all about him because you just learn about him, so you're on board now. Donya, what do you think? Why is this... I mean, I guess it's because of the helmet that we saw that we were sort of theorizing about.
It's definitely because of the helmet. So the helmet itself is like an iconic piece of like his uniform. So
God, I love that stupid helmet.
it was, I can't remember if it was his father's or his grandfather's in like World War One or something like that, and he inherited it and then wore it as part of his Flash costume when he was, you know, fighting crime and all of that stuff. But you know, it's the most likely theory out of all of them. I can't see that it's gonna be anyone else. I mean, they can bring in some of the like little threads of Jay's kind of backstory anyway. Is like he could have been placed in suspended animation somewhere within the Speed Force, and their messing around with time has dislodged him and thrown him straight into our world. I mean, that could be a way that they bring him in.
Mm-hmm.
If his helmet flew through and we get that, then what else could have come through?
Yeah, I like that theory. That's good. I would definitely be on board with that. So the casting call that they released is for a classically handsome square-jawed hero in his 30s to 40s, and the character is being called John Clark, which is why, you know, we're not super sure. But yeah, it seems like Jay is going to be the way. And oh, I made a little rhyme. The Jay way. And, you know, I think that's good. You need more, like, speedsters. And I want to have more of the, I want to learn more about, in the show, like, seeing ramifications of them, you know, using the Speed Force and et cetera. Like, it's the most interesting part of The Flash, and they did a great job of integrating it into the first season. But it's also one of those things where they could be like, okay, and now we're not worrying about this for a while. Now we're going off to do other things. And it's like, no, guys, that's super important. But they seem to be on the right track with it, for sure. And then the other piece of Flash casting news is apparently in season two, they will be introducing a new love interest for Barry. This is the role of Wendy, who is scientific-minded and bright. And she's a police officer, right? She's going to be a police officer and somewhat Felicity Smoke inspired, as many people have been pointing out. So I guess this will shake things up for the Barry Iris shippers out there. I'm still like all about Caitlin and Barry personally. I think they have way better chemistry, but whatever. I guess because Felicity can't be on The Flash permanently, they're like, let's just basically cast Felicity, but our own version.
Yeah, I mean, I don't particularly hate the idea of Barry getting a different love interest. I mean, you know, they've kind of put forward this whole potential future where they end up, like, Iris and Barry end up together and marrying and all of that. But, you know, Iris probably isn't going to feel up to dating anyone at all for like the foreseeable future after Eddie's untimely end in season one. So, you know, I'm kind of okay with the idea that Barry isn't going to do that whole cliche kind of I'll wait for you sort of thing, hopefully, because you never know what will happen, and maybe this person will literally come in and just sweep Barry off his feet.
Well, probably the opposite is more likely.
You think?
You know what I like about this is Grant Gustin plays the like rom-com aspect so well. He has such great timing for that. And, you know, he does like comedy in general very well, but I want to see him in like a straight up rom-com. And so I enjoy when he gets those scenes in The Flash because I'm just such a fan of his, as I think I've made very clear. But I just think he plays all the different aspects of Barry so well. And, you know, Barry's life is tough and very complicated, and so you need some of these lighter aspects. And I totally agree with you, like, it would be completely impractical for him and Iris to jump into something together. And I really like his interactions with Felicity, so if that's what they're going for, great. I'm totally on board for that.
Yeah, because I really, really like the dynamic that Felicity and Barry have as well. Like, that's something that I really, really enjoyed.
They're nerd love.
Yeah. Yeah, there's nothing wrong with a little bit of nerd love. Yeah. I like that.
Okay, last little bit of Flash news, sort of. Victor Garber has been answering some questions about his part in Legends of Tomorrow, which, although we got that awesome trailer, is still a little like, what is this show even happening and what is even going on in this? So, you know, it's exciting to see. So he says, first of all, clearing some things up, Robbie Amell will be in the show. So, well, in the first episode anyway, of The Flash, because people were wondering, I guess, what was happening with them all. I don't know. I find it really funny that people are like, seem incapable of seeing them separately now, you know, because of Firestorm. When he was cast in particular in Legends of Tomorrow, everyone freaked out because Robbie Amell was not in it. And they just, yeah, it's just this ongoing thing of being like, but are you back together? Like, are you going to be in this episode? What's happening? Which I just find very funny. Here's a question. Do you think the reason for that is like that they're hesitant to get Steven and Robbie Amell on screen too often together? Like, when they both turn up in, is that the penultimate episode of The Flash?
Yes, yeah, I think it was.
Yeah, when they show up, and I just couldn't help but think, oh, it's the cousins have arrived. they're cousins, right? Are they cousins or brothers? No, they're cousins.
Are they cousins?
Are they brothers? I need to find this out now. I thought they were brothers, and then I thought someone told me, like, no, they're not. And then I felt bad about it, so maybe not. I need to know the answer to this. Anyway, tell me what you think about Victor Garber while I research the ML. Yes, they're cousins.
Okay,
there we go. I was totally right. The cousin team up. Anyway.
I don't know. I'm still a little bit... I like the trailer for Legends of Tomorrow, but I'm kind of, like, on the fence, sort of. I have no strong feelings either way about his involvement in, like, Legends of Tomorrow. Or The Flash. Like, I don't have particularly, like, I don't feel as though he's, like, the major thing for me coming back into either series. Like, there are other characters that I'm more invested and more interested in, but you know,
I weirdly like him. I don't know why. Yeah, I think Robbie Amell does nothing for me. I think he's pretty wooden, you know, in terms of being an actor, but I like him. He's I think I enjoyed the, like, his scenes with Barry are always very fun, and his scenes with, like, Cisco and Caitlin were always fun, because he kind of, I guess he sort of filled that void of Wells without being a psychopath, but all their, like, nerd talk. This is a very nerdy, heavy episode of Hero Hype, but, you know, I really like that, all the jargony talk, and that was very fun for me. I don't know why. I really enjoyed that, like, Star Labs work environment in particular, so maybe just because it kind of tied into that a little bit. And also because he had a bit of shade, you know. He didn't have a lot of time for people who could not keep up with him. And I found that fun to watch as well.
Do you think he's going to be the Wells of Legends of Tomorrow, in that, like, his role is going to be, like, kind of in the lab mentor kind of?
Yeah, I was kind of thinking maybe role. That's the direction that they're going, because he's the brains of the operation anyway.
Yeah.
For Firestorm, like, that's how they've kind of divided it. He's kind of the brains of that outfit, which is not hard because you know. Anyway,
poor Robbie Amell.
Oh no, I mean his character. Anyway, yeah, I think I could see it playing out that way. That would make sense also if Robbie Amell hasn't been cast for like the whole... Because he's meant to appear in Legends of Tomorrow, but not as a regular. So
yeah,
that would make sense to me if he was kind of behind the scenes, maybe calling the shots a little. Who even cares? Let's be real. We're all there for Sarah Lance. No one cares about anyone else. Okay, wrapping up TV news just a little bit. This should make, I guess, make you happy, because Henry Simmons, who plays Mac on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., has been promoted to a series regular. So,
hallelujah!
Yeah, I hope that makes you feel better about the weird, like, electricity boy from last time, who you are not pleased about.
Yeah, I definitely feel a lot better. I really like Mac. So
I hate Mac.
Really? Because the one thing that I really like about Mac in general is that when some of the other characters, even though we're meant to root for them, when they were doing things that were kind of mildly questionable sometimes, he's not afraid to call them out. He's not afraid to call anyone out. But I really like Mac. I'd like to see more of him, especially with his new protecting all of these like artifacts role kind of thing.
Yeah, I could take it or leave it. I found him so frustrating during the season, and I think I have complained about him before on Hero Hype.
Yeah.
But I just didn't like him, and everyone kept being, oh, Mac, I love Mac. And I think it was when he gets sort of contaminated, you know, and he goes a bit crazy, and everyone's like, is he dead? What's happened to Mac? And I was like, could take it or leave it. I'm not at all invested. So, but hey, that's fine. And I think people will be pleased to see that someone who is probably more of a like member of the team, as it were, is being promoted, not just sort of this weird interloper, this inhuman interloper, as it were. So anyway, that's kind of it for TV news. Let us know what you think about The Flash and Legends of Tomorrow and what's happening over there. And you can console Donya on Constantine on Twitter at Hero Hype Podcast, where she will be crying forever. But this should make up for it a little bit. And, you know, I'm honestly surprised you managed to hold in your excitement for this long. But we have some news on the Gambit X-Men film with Channing Tatum. And... are you okay over there? Are you like hyperventilating?
Yeah,
what's going on?
I think I got, I like,
are you over this?
I'm not over it. The news came out while I was away from my computer. So I was, the whole weekend I was out with my mum and dad, and I just wasn't on Twitter. I wasn't online. I wasn't, and suddenly I was just getting like text messages while I was out and about with my mum and dad, and I was like going, what the hell has happened? Because, you know, no one really, really ever like texted me that many times in a row. And it was it was a friend of mine telling me that Gambit had got a director. And I was like there going, oh my God. And my mum and dad were just looking at me like I'd gone completely and utterly crazy. But, you know, that's what happens when you're out with civilians.
the news is that Rupert Wyatt, who directed Rise of the Planet of the Apes, and he directed The Gambler, that was with Mark Wahlberg, right?
Yes.
And he directed The Escapist as well. He has signed on to direct the Gambit film. This is very exciting for, like, Gambit has this weirdly passionate fan base, which is great.
Yeah.
But just, like, it's weird to me because just, anyway. So this is for the film that's slated currently for October next year. So I guess, you know, it does make sense that they needed to kind of get moving on it. But very exciting news. I think everyone in general just gets excited when you get, like, a director and, you know, you start hearing more about it because then it feels like it's actually happening. It's actually going to come true. Something that is not happening, Spider-Man casting. Sony and Marvel are having some difficulties in agreeing on who should play Spider-Man. And, maybe because they have done this story twice before. But apparently Asa Butterfield is no longer the top choice for the studios, which is surprising because he's the name who has kept being leaked and leaked and leaked over and over. So the three actors left are Tom Holland, Charlie Plummer, and Matthew Lince. So I guess they must have been doing like rounds of auditions. I don't even know. But
I think
Marvel apparently is set on Charlie Plummer and Sony wants Tom Holland. And they're just refusing. They're just sulking about it, seems like.
Yeah. Which isn't that surprising, really. I mean, Sony and Marvel took this long to agree on actually having Spider-Man as part of the Marvel universe.
Right.
So having them agree on anything, we should have realized it wasn't going to be that easy. But yeah, apparently they flew in, and this is all rumors. Nothing has been officially said. They flew in six of the people that were on their shortlist to Atlanta, where obviously they're filming Captain America Civil War, and they apparently tested them while they're out there. So whether that included testing against some of the existing cast members or in like an actual scene or something like that, maybe that's what they've been doing with these kids out in Atlanta. But again, I'm really not surprised that they can't agree on who should be Spider-Man. At this point, we'll probably find out when Civil War comes out and he just shows up.
That would be kind of cool, though. Like, that would be the only thing that would make this kind of fun, at least. You know, that there would be like a fun surprise.
I guess it would be a little bit frustrating not knowing who they've decided on, because even if it, like, especially if it's one actor that I'm not familiar with, would love to look at some of like their previous kind of work to see what they're like as an actor and how they might tackle Peter. But again, that would actually be a kind of cool reveal, is he just shows up.
Oh, because I have zero need to know who this is before it happens, because I think honestly the best case scenario for this is that he would show up and you would go, oh, that's surprising to me, that has turned this into a positive experience, versus whoever is cast, we're not going to like it regardless of whoever it is, because we're already like anti Spider-Man and anti the direction that they're going in. I have a feeling what happened when they turned up on the Cap 3 set is they were like, oh, these like 14-year-old children do not test well with these like grown adults. This is going to be such a weird dynamic. I wonder why this is happening. And, you know, it, as you said, it makes sense that they can't agree, because it's like this weird shared property. They've got their own films happening. Sony is just like got the Spider-Man death grip going on. They just don't want to let up anything on that. And Marvel is not good at compromise. So it totally makes sense. And, honestly, if we didn't know until Cap 3, I think that would be great, but I think it's very unlikely that we could get that far without it leaking if they did actually make a decision.
Yeah, someone would find out the information somehow.
Right.
Someone would get their hands on it.
Yeah, exactly, especially because, you know, that movie is not coming anytime soon. Speaking of Captain America 3, is it even worth mentioning Mark Ruffalo has been hinting that he may also be in the film? I guess now the list has really become who isn't in this movie. And at the moment it's, what, Thor, Nick Fury, and Maria Hill. I think that's basically it.
I think that's it. Yeah. But again, do you know what? That's actually mildly surprising to me, the Nick Fury and Maria Hill part, because I know that, like, it would make sense in some way that Nick Fury is sometimes the I'm going to bash your heads together, stop being idiots person. So if he was in it, it would probably be a much shorter movie by the time he tells everyone to stop acting like petulant children, I guess. But, you know, they have such a huge presence. They're so involved in these storylines. They always show up. That them not showing up in what is probably one of the most important storylines in recent comic history, that doesn't make a lot of sense to me, considering how prominent and how involved they've been up until this point. But also, when I saw this news headline in my head, I just added, and water is wet.
Yeah.
You know? it was just kind of like, oh, really? Okay, we'll just add everyone to it. Just add more people. At this point, it doesn't matter. Everyone's in this movie. Everyone.
Yeah, I can't even, like, deal with it. But, yeah, I think that Nick Fury news must have come out right after we recorded our last episode. We talked about it a lot on Hype, which is another podcast from Hypebull.com, which is like a general entertainment show. If you are not listening to that, you might want to check it out. But we talked about that a lot on the last episode, so it seems very far away now. But yeah, I did think that was a weird kind of oversight. Not because I expected S.H.I.E.L.D. to have a big presence, but because of their kind of like regulations that are at the center of Civil War, I would expect Nick Fury to kind of have some input into that, or, you know, to have some reaction to that at the very least, because it's kind of, you know, you're like on his lawn, you know, that's like, that's his game that you're playing in. So anyway, I don't know. Samuel L. Jackson was also surprised that he would not be appearing. So anyway, we will let you know the inevitable next piece of casting from Captain America Civil War, which will be like, oh, P.S. Thor's going to turn up for a bit. And, oh, it's just an Avengers movie. Great. I'm not bitter at all. What are you talking about? Okay, so a little bit of Ant-Man news, the film that no one cares about. No, I'm kidding. I'm sure some people are into Ant-Man. It's weird to think that it's coming out in like a month, though. Literally a month.
I know. From today. I know. I saw, well, when I watched a couple of these little teasers, I noticed the date on there and I looked at what the date was today and I was like, oh my God, that's really, really soon. And I have made zero plans to go and see the movie, like with anyone. And usually at a month out, I have plans locked down for like where I'm going to go and see it and if I'm going to go and see it with someone. But Ant-Man, I haven't made any plans yet at all. So
I just realized I'm not going to be in the country when this movie comes out.
Ooh.
I just realized that.
You're still going to be in the States?
Yeah, I'll still be in the States when this movie comes out, which is annoying because I'll probably miss the screening that's happening here, which will happen probably the week that I fly out. That will be annoying. Oh, well. I guess I'll have to pay for it. Whatever. You know what I did like from Ant-Man, though? Those posters that they released, like Ant-Man versus the Avengers, those posters where he's, you know, like Pacific Rimming up on Iron Man's shoulder and just hanging out. I did like those. Those were very clever.
I loved the posters.
Yeah.
The teasers, however, knocked me back about 10 steps to my... I'm still not too sure about this at all. Like, there was something in these teasers that just felt really, really off for me. Something just didn't land right. I think that the timing was slightly weird and the delivery of some of the lines just, maybe it'll work better in context. I'm hoping it lands and comes across better in context, but in those little teasers and the TV spot, there was something I just wasn't connecting with at all. So
yeah,
I'm back to being very, very worried about this movie.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I don't know. It's a shame because I love Paul Rudd as well. And same. I don't love Ant-Man. I think Ant-Man's dumb, but I love Paul Rudd. So I'll definitely see it, obviously, and we will be talking about it on Hero Hype. But it's weird to think that it's coming out so soon because, you know, I saw those posters and thought, oh, that's weird, like that they're doing a promotional push now. And then I looked at my calendar and realized, no, it makes total sense they're doing a promotional push now because it's a month out from this movie and I have completely forgotten that. So interesting. We will see. A different film that I would be much more interested in watching is, of course, a Black Widow movie. And we had a fun interview with the organizer of this We Want Widow campaign on Hyperbole this week so that you can read the full interview. Basically, it's like this hashtag We Want Widow. There's been flash mobs and people posting like photos of themselves and cosplaying and doing all of this crazy stuff. The point of the campaign is obviously to try and point out to Marvel how many people want this film and that, you know, it's like financially viable, I guess, because yeah. that seems to be the main argument that we frequently hear. Well, no, there are two. The first argument is like, but she's like totally boring. What would you even make a movie about? Which don't even start me on that ridiculous statement. And then the other argument is, oh, if, you know, if we thought people wanted the movie, then we would have made it already. You know, if we thought people would go and pay money to see this movie, then we totally would have made it. And there have been a lot of these little campaigns, I guess, trying to get that point across. But this is definitely yeah. the biggest one that we've seen. And it seems to be going pretty strong still, which is exciting.
It does, which I really, really like. And some of the costumes are phenomenal. Like yeah. some of the Black Widows were like so cool. I loved like some of them were like the Avengers Assemble cartoon version of Black Widow, mm-hmm. who is awesome as well, and I love her. But yeah, it was really, really interesting. And do you know what one of the other arguments I've heard for not having a Black Widow movie is that she has like total screen time wise across all of the movies.
Oh yeah.
Like the third highest.
She's basically a co-star of the Winter Soldier. She has the third highest screen time in the first Avengers movie. Like that's not what that has no impact.
No, because the only two people higher than her in terms of total screen time is Captain America and Iron Man. Oh, wait, do both of those guys have their own movies? Yes, they do. Yeah. Why is that an argument? That's not an argument for there not being a Black Widow movie.
It's also a ridiculous thing because just because a character is on screen doesn't mean that, you know, what is happening is serving their character at all. Most of the times when Black Widow is on screen in the Marvel movies, she's cleaning up after the boys, as she says herself. You know, she is helping them out. She's being the secondary character to their main character. And having a larger role in Winter Soldier, it's a Captain America film. Like, it's an actual Captain America film. So, first of all, you don't have any of the other Avengers in the way. So, I guess we've got Black Widow. Let's use her. Anyway, that argument is so, I can't even deal with it. But yeah, this is, you know, I don't think it's going to change Marvel's mind. Of course not, because this isn't Spider-Man. But I am very excited to see the, like, level of enthusiasm and all the different comments people have been saying about why they personally would like a Black Widow film. And, you know, it's really nice, like, everyone coming together for... It's not a negative thing. It's not a negative campaign in any sense. It's not about, you know, how dare you not give us this. It's about, like, this is why this is important to us. And this is why you should give us awesome movies and merchandise. And we'll consume it. Like, we'll buy it. We'll buy those things. And you'll get more money. So everyone wins. And, yeah, it would be great. But the interview is really good. So you can definitely go and read that on hyperbole.com, and you should, you know, tweet your, like, we want Widow reasons and thoughts and etc. So yeah, is that it? Oh no, a little bit of Wonder Woman news. Yes. We had a look at, yes, she says, we had our very first look at Wonder Woman's costume. This was from the licensing expo last week in Vegas. They have this, like, big licensing expo where they just have all of this just licensing stuff. They have all this weird stuff. But one of the things they had was a Batman vs. Superman and Warner Brothers little area. And part of that was a Wonder Woman figure, I guess. And we got the first look at her costume, which we haven't seen yet. And it is very short. Which is most people's issue with it, but she's got a badass shield and that looks great, and she's got her sword and you know, but yeah, it's, you kind of can't not look at how short it is.
It is very, very short. And the thing with it is that Wonder Woman's costume, even in the comics, has always been kind of short, but the way that they've kind of got around it is that they're actual shorts. Right. They're like, it kind of comes down her legs a little bit and is actually like almost like spandexy kind of stuck to her legs. This looks like a tiny flappy skirt bit of leather is what it looks like.
It
looks like an extension of her belt, then, I should say.
Yeah.
It looks like there's like a little section right underneath what would be classed as her traditional belt. Mm-hmm. The little silver W kind of thing. There's a little kind of bit of fabric that comes directly down underneath that and comes to a point. And either side, there's two other parts of fabric. But without seeing this in movement, what it looks like from there is that it's going to flap around and literally expose everything.
Yeah, so what people have been saying in, you know, opposition to this is, oh, but she always wears a skirt. Like, she always wears a short skirt. And that's fine, but as you can see from the rest of the costume, which, if you haven't looked at it, go to hypo.com and have a look at the... Because the body armor is really cool.
Yeah, I love the body armor.
The body armor is fantastic. But, you know, as we have seen so far from Batman vs. Superman and what we saw from the first Superman film, is that they're going for this, like, dark, kind of gritty... it's not realism, but it's like the superhero version of realism. You know, that's what they're going for. So in any case, this is just impractical for the universe that they have created. And, you know, you can separate her from Batman and from Superman by being like, this is something different, this is something new, without exposing her in that way. And
yeah.
That's not, like, about slut-shaming or anything. That's about, it doesn't make sense for her character, and it's also very obvious treatment of her. Like, she's being treated very differently to the men, who you can also see here, who are fully clothed. So, you know, it's just, why am I even surprised? And yet I am still surprised. So,
you know, everything from, like, the waist up, I'm completely in love with.
Yeah.
I love the little headpiece. I love her bodice armor. I love the gauntlets. I love the little lasso. I love her belt, the little straps that are coming around to hold the scabbard for her sword. You know, I love everything about it, like her big shield. I even really, really like the boots, the armored boots that she's got. But again, that it's just that little skirt piece. And it's not that she shouldn't be wearing a skirt. It's just that it could have been designed and executed in a much better way while staying true to the original character design.
Yeah, it could have been 2 inches longer, for starters, without, like, damaging the integrity of the costume design.
Do you know what? 2 inches longer, and I probably wouldn't have had a problem with it at all.
Yeah.
Because the fabric's quite heavy, but being that short, it's going to flip up really, really easily. And even when she's flying, because, hey, guys, she flies, like, it's not going to hide anything at all. Because the angle, even when you look at the angle from the back of it, it's like you can see ass cheek.
Yeah, the back is the worst bit. And that's the thing. It's about... there is no need for that. And she would, like, if you've read any Wonder Woman comics, like, she would not be into that either at all. So none of this, like, oh, but in the comic books, just stop. Anyway.
2 inches longer. That's it. Yeah. That's all it needs to be.
Let's start a Twitter campaign. We'll get a flash mob going. I think that's what the cool kids are doing these days.
Two more inches.
Yeah. Okay, that's it for news this week. So let us know on Twitter what you thought about all of this. If you had rage over the Wonder Woman costume, if you're surprised by Ruffalo's inclusion in Civil War, both of those should be totally acceptable things. Time for our quotes of the week. I'm going to give my quote of the week to going back to the We Want Widow campaign, because basically I think this sums it up very, very well. This is from Autumn Wheelock, who is the captain of the flash mob in New York. I hope I said your name correctly. You don't listen to this, but I hope I said her name correctly. That's a great name. Who said, "To say that you can't support a movie is such garbage. For so long, for girls, she was the only female suited up hero, the only lady Avenger." And I feel like that basically sums up a lot of people's problems with this. So good job, Autumn Wheelock, if that is how you say your name. And what have you got for us, Dee?
I have a longer one, and this came from what was a much longer piece that Daniel Cerone wrote based on the news of the cancellation of Constantine. But there was one little segment in the middle that really, really kind of hit home for me. And he wrote, as a general principle, writers don't choose a writing career to achieve stardom. Whatever demons or insecurities drove them to find freedom of expression through written words generally keeps writers comfortably obscure behind their words. Nor do people choose writing as a means to financial freedom. I'd venture to guess that most who set out to write professionally never receive a paycheck for their hopeful scribbles or keystrokes. In fact, nobody I know ever chose a writing career. It chose them. You write because that's what you do. Like breathing, it just happens and you have to do it. And you just hope someday somebody out there notices what you're trying to say.
Well, that was nice.
I know. I just thought it was a really, really nice kind of thing from someone who writes regularly and is in the industry about why they're doing what they're doing. And even if it doesn't hit home with absolutely everyone or resonate with everyone, if it resonates with a few or one person, at least that's one person who's noticing like what you're saying and kind of is connecting with your words, I guess. And I mean, for a lot of writers, that's what they want.
Yeah. All right. Well, let us know your quotes of the week also. It's time for Comic Corner, where we give you comic book recommendations based on your requests or based on films or TV shows that are upcoming. We have heard you guys want Captain America, you want Winter Soldier. We are working on it, but it takes a bit more time to narrow those down, especially because, as you may have gathered, Donya has a lot of feelings about those characters. So we will get there. Don't worry. We see you asking on Twitter and in the comments. I promise we're not being deaf to your cries. But we have something a little different for you this week. Donya, what have you prepared for us?
So someone actually asked for Professor X, which I actually took as a little bit of a challenge because Professor X doesn't have any solo comics at all, full stop. But I think it was Shelby who asked for this because she really, really loves like First Class and wanted a little bit more about Charles Xavier. So
great,
I did request. A little bit. Yes, yeah, I did a little bit of digging, but I will say that First Class is probably the best depiction of Charles Xavier that we've gotten, even from like comics and everything. It's still one of the properties that has focused on him so much and given us so much of just that character. May not be completely in line with his comic book origins, but it was so great for his character and I absolutely love it. So go and rewatch that as well. But let's see. So the first one I've got is Essential Uncanny X-Men Volume 1. This collects the first 24 issues of Uncanny X-Men and dives into Xavier's backstory. It served as a kind of build-up to the arrival of his half-brother Juggernaut. But what might come as a surprise to most is the absence of the almost bookish Xavier that we've come to know and his more adventurous adolescence that you'll find on the pages of this Stan Lee and Jack Kirby story. The second one I've got is X-Men Legacy Volume 1, Divided He Stands. This is probably the closest that Xavier has ever come to having his own solo series, where he kind of takes the lead in a very ensemble-driven run. This collection highlights Xavier's reevaluation of his life following a near-fatal gunshot wound, if that sounds familiar at all, and takes a closer look at how he made the X-Men into the team they are today. But it also takes a really close look at his friendship and falling out with Magneto. And the last one I've got is Uncanny X-Men 161. Yes, this is a single-issue comic. While Uncanny X-Men 161 is included in several collections, none of them are what I'd really class as Xavier specific, and this can be read as a one-off. It really digs into Xavier and Magneto's relationship before everything went south. It highlights them as counterpoints to each other, but also shows another side of Xavier before he settled into his role as Professor X. It also introduces Gabrielle Haller, who goes on to give birth to Xavier's son. But if you do want to pick up one of the collections instead, just let me know on Twitter and maybe some other, like a couple of other characters you might be interested in, and then I can point out the right collection that it's part of for you.
Nice. Okay, time for feedback. Let's have a look at our last episode. You guys have some things to say. Okay, we've got some comic book recommendations. We have noted those. Don't worry, we will come to you. Christine says, I'm actually optimistic about Spider-Man. Marvel has finally gotten the property backed, and they have to try and make it great. Peter Parker is a quality character, and if we can forget all the previous movies and focus on the comic books, I have confidence in them. They're obviously going to milk it all they can, which is why they're going so young. Who knows, if they follow the continuity, maybe we'll get Miles Morales in a few years. That would be, in my opinion, the best way to go about it. I'm very pleased to hear that some people are excited about Spider-Man, because I feel like all we do is be a little more critical, perhaps, of it. But yeah, if they hadn't said, like, many times that we will never see Miles Morales on screen, I would love if they did that, you know, kind of reestablish with Peter Parker, and then, as you say, Christine, to like just milk it for everything that they can, then introduce Miles and do a sort of crossover and then follow Miles on, and that way they don't have to have an actor commit for, you know, 8 films or something. But yeah, it hasn't looked good for seeing an adaptation of him, unfortunately.
Yeah, I kind of agree with that. I mean, they're never going to give up Peter Parker.
Yeah.
They're not. It's just, I just hope that whatever they do end up doing with these solo movies maybe puts a different spin on it than what we're used to. Because otherwise we are genuinely just seeing the same story over and over again, just told in very mildly different ways. And I mean, there's not a lot in terms of the actual classic story separating the original trilogy of Spider-Man movies with the Amazing Spider-Man movies. They may have different villains and they may have different outcomes, but the core of it is pretty much identical. And, you know, the only way that they're going to kind of separate it, I guess, and make this something new is by making it new, you know. But then you kind of fall into the trap of how far away from Peter do you have to go before he's not Peter anymore?
You cast a different Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Problem solved. No, yeah. I completely agree. Hey, maybe it will be great. And if it is, I will be the first one to be like, I am surprised and I was wrong about that. But so far, nothing has indicated that that will be the case. But good on you for being excited. I like your enthusiasm. Okay, and also Matthew HPG says, love the podcast. Just wondering, have you guys read/seen Watchmen? It's one of my all-time favorites, and I'd love to hear a discussion about it. You should give it a shot. I have read Watchmen. It's one of my favorite comics. And I have seen the film, and, you know, I don't hate it as much as I guess I meant to, because I love the comics so much. Like, a lot of purists really hate, I don't want to spoil it for anyone, but really hate particularly what they did with the ending of it. I feel like for the film that they made, the ending kind of worked and kind of made sense. So it wasn't like a bad film by any means, but the story doesn't work as well as it did in the original format, for sure. And, you know, if you haven't read it, here's a good comic book recommendation. If you haven't read it, it's so short and it's so good. And it's like, you've never read anything like it.
No,
I would 1000% recommend that anyone check that out and give it a shot, because it was like absolutely revolutionary when it when it happened. And, you know, it continues to be just amazing and crazy and unique and fantastic. So, yeah,
completely,
so I didn't
mind
the film, but I love the comic. Is that a good answer?
Yeah, I'm kind of on the same, like, thing as you. I, like most people, I didn't hate the movie. I wasn't too, like, I wasn't completely sold on the ending, but like you said, it worked in the context of the movie, which is what, for that adaption, was the important part. But again, yeah, completely agree. Go pick up the comic. You can get it in one book.
Yeah. It's, yeah, I have it somewhere around in my place.
I have it on my bookshelf as well. It's one of those, like, sometimes like my books will come and go. I'll donate them. I'll like give them to people, or I'll sell things on. But that's one of the ones that has been a staple on my bookshelf and hasn't gone anywhere for a good few years. So it's definitely one to get and keep hold of. Or if you can't afford to buy it, pop to your local library. Chances are very, very high that they're going to have it there, because it's probably even, I would imagine that in some universities potentially, or colleges, it's very likely going to be included on certain book lists or recommended reading.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of one of those things that is so ingrained in culture and like how it approaches it, that it's definitely going to be
classic.
A library. It is a classic. So
for sure,
you know,
yeah, you could definitely find it. So if anyone has not read it, you should definitely check it out and let us know what you think, but it will blow your mind. Okay, over to Twitter now for a little bit more from you guys. Don't forget, you can always tweet us at Hero Hype Podcast, and we post funny things that we have said to Siri, or that's what we did this week. So even Australian Siri has a sense of humor, but you'll have to go to Twitter to find out what we're talking about. And while you're there, make sure you follow us to keep up to date with all of the news. Donya, did you want to get these?
Yes. So first bit of Twitter feedback we've got is from Julio, who says, just listen to Hero Hype Podcast, and I couldn't agree more with their assessment on Supergirl. Trailer didn't do the pilot justice.
Yay!
Yay.
Yeah, that's a pretty good summary. that's a nice, a nice concise summary.
Yeah. And Amalia, who actually kind of, I guess, kicked off a little bit about our chat about Supergirl on the last episode, responded back again and said, really interesting points about Supergirl. Already decided to give it the benefit of the doubt, but I'm more hopeful now, which actually really, really pleased about that.
I'm glad she didn't tweet us and say, guys, thanks for bullying me about Supergirl on the last episode, because I think we got a bit intense about
we
it.
Did get a little bit intense, but
sorry,
I mean,
Amalia.
Yeah, I mean, we're always happy to even have discussions across Twitter if if you have any other concerns about it, like, join the conversation, you know, chat back to us. We'd be more than happy to like talk about like our thoughts and feelings a little bit more, I guess, contained into 140 characters in some places, but
yeah, and we're always intense, so that's what you get.
Yeah. And the last little bit of Twitter feedback that isn't related to our question of the week was from Leah, who said, finally getting a chance to listen to the latest episode, and from everything I've heard about Civil War, I definitely would have preferred Donya's scenario with Cap 3 and then Civil War. I don't know that my emotions are going to be as involved when I feel like there's not many strong friendships to be broken in Civil War.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think we've talked about that many times, but that's basically our dream scenario would be Civil War as its own film, Cap 3 so that you have time to deal with the fallout of the Winter Soldier story arc and build up more of like Steve and Tony so that there's actually some emotional fallout, and then have Civil War as a in-between Avengers movie, and it would all make sense. It would all make sense. But alas.
So much sense.
Okay, then our question of the week, Amalia had a belated one, but we will still accept it. We asked you guys for your dream headline, what would you like to see announced? And hers was, upcoming Spider-Man trilogy shelved, replaced by a long-awaited Black Widow franchise. So we thought that was appropriate, given the news we talked about this week. We also asked you last week, which director would you like to see take on a superhero movie next? And Shelby said, Matthew Vaughn comes back to X-Men to direct a Xavier Beast and Havoc road trip film. That kind of sounds amazing. I can't say I had ever considered that before, Shelby, but I like your style. And was it Shelby who was asking for the Xavier recommendations?
Yes.
Okay, well, so hopefully you've at least had a little bit of your fill of Xavier this week. And I said mine last week, which was that I stole yours. And what have you got for us?
So I kind of chose one that's like, if Anna DuVernay doesn't get Black Panther, which I think at this point it's pretty much guaranteed that she will, I have an alternative director for who could do it, who is Mira Nair. She's done like loads and loads of feature films and documentaries, but I think her most recent film, The Reluctant Fundamentalist, was so good in terms of like identity politics and like kind of mixed in with an action thriller, that I think that's almost exactly the kind of tone that Black Panther is going to need. But she's lived in Africa for like years. She's from India originally, but she has also set up like a film lab that mentors East African filmmakers and promotes African cinema. So something she feels really, really strongly about, like getting the truth of like Africa and how it is and that culture and everything about it, like true to form on screen, like without covering anything up, without like making it this exotic other kind of thing. She's very, very, very good at like bringing those themes across. She's also currently working on a movie for Disney that is being shot in Uganda and is all about a Ugandan like girl who lives in poverty who becomes like a chess grandmaster. It's going to be a really interesting film, but I think she'd be a good alternative for it. And it's not that people who kind of have like blockbuster films haven't gone after her before, because she actually turned down the opportunity to direct Order of the Phoenix as well.
There you go.
So she is a kind of sought after director, but it would also be kind of whether or not she'd want to pick that up. But she does have like connections to Disney, so it could happen, and I think she'd be a really good alternative.
Yeah, well, if only she had taken Order of the Phoenix, and then we wouldn't have been stuck with David Yates forever. But that is for a different podcast. That's interesting you say about The Reluctant Fundamentalist, because I did not see that film because I really did not enjoy that book. But I think it was because of the writing. But that's also for a different podcast.
Yeah, the movie was really good. I think definitely, like, regardless of your feelings on the book, definitely give the movie a shot, because I really liked it. I haven't read the book, though. So,
all right, I will. We've all got our, you've got your book recommendation, that's Watchmen, you've got your movie recommendation. This has turned into a very different podcast from what it started out as. And hopefully that's okay. Okay, time for our question of the week to leave you with. What are we asking people this week?
If you could have anyone join the cast of your favorite superhero show, who would it be? Or who would you promote as a regular?
Do you have an answer? Did you have someone in mind?
Probably, I can't remember the actor's name. The guy who plays Deathlok.
Oh, mm-hmm. Yeah, God, what is his name?
I know his first name is August.
August J. Richards.
August J. Richards.
We got there.
Or J. August Richards. Yeah. Or okay. That's who I'd promote. I like Deathlok. Like, I like Mike Peterson as a character. I think there's a lot that they could explore, like a lot more they could explore with him, his relationship with his son, and as a single father trying to provide for his kid while also being like in this kind of like space between being like used as a tool as a villain versus mm-hmm. his true feelings. Like, there's so much more they could explore with his character, and I just want them to really take the chance to do it, because he's so fascinating, and I've always really just wanted them to push him a little bit more. So I'd love to see him upped as a regular.
Yeah, J. August Richards, for those playing at home, or Charles Gunn, as I will forever know him. And if you know what that's from, then you can get a point, gentle listener. Okay, that's it for this week of Hero Hype. Let us know your answer to our question of the week. Let us know your thoughts on the news. We know it was a little lighter this week, but, you know, we're sure things will be happening. We're both doing a bit of traveling in the next month or so, but we are going to try and stick to our fortnightly schedule as much as possible. And of course, we will also have, you know, something to talk about Ant-Man when that comes out. So yeah, stay tuned for that and much more on Hero Hype. And we'll be back in 2 weeks-ish with another episode. We'll see you then. Bye.
Bye.